Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans. Thank you so much for tuning in. We've been on a great run, and today continues that run with another great episode of Verbal Shenanigans. Now, we are happy to have some sponsors that have been with us for a long time and that we hope they stay forever because they are just great to work with. One of them is Manskirt Brewing. That is located in Hackettstown, New Jersey. They just have an awesome tap room with eight rotating tap handles, something different for everyone, lots of different styles. They don't get cornered into one style. They've been putting up new murals, doing events every single weekend, so there's always something going on with Manskirt Brewing. And this week is no different. They just released Checks and Balances in cans, their new flagship Czech Pilsner. They got Big Brew in Morristown coming up next Saturday, and then the following Saturday, they got their anniversary party, their third anniversary already. And Manskirt Brewing is just a great place to go have a pint. So go check it out. Go check out Joe in his Manskirt. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook. That is Manskirt Brewing. Now, we are also brought to you by Wolf Nation, W-U-L-F. Wolf Nation is an up-and-coming designer apparel company. Wake up, live free apparel. They make clothes for men, women, children, boys, girls, dogs. They got a whole bunch of different things coming out, different designs. They just came out with snapback hats and new Halloween-colored shirts, and they're really trying to get things up and running off the ground, and they make great apparel. That is Wolf Nation. Wake up, live free. It's only a dream if you are not pursuing it. Go check them out at wolfnation.rocks or on social media, Wolf Nation. Wake up, live free. Finally, Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Trivia Revolution is a trivia company based out of beer bars and breweries all over New Jersey. Every night, there's trivia. So go out and play. It's free to play. You can win prizes. You can be the dumbest person and still win prizes sometimes cash, sometimes gift certificates to bars and breweries. Go check them out. There's a bonus item every week. Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Now, this week on the podcast, we are joined by Brandon Novak. Brandon Novak, you might know him from Jackass. You might know him from Viva La Bam, CKY, former professional skateboarder. Brandon comes on the show, talks a lot about his sobriety and kind of what led him down that path and how he found his way out. Just a really interesting interview, very unique. So without further ado, give it up for Brandon Novak. Enjoy the podcast.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Okay, all right. Hello, 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 hello.
Hi.
Welcome back to another installment of the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Thank you, old listeners. Thank you, new listeners. And thank you, old co-host. How are you doing, Mike Berlow?
I am doing fabulistic, I guess.
I don't think that's a word.
No?
No.
I always figured if you jam a bunch of words together, by rule, it just makes it a mega word.
Nope, that is definitely not a thing. I'll give it to you. But everyone, I don't even know what I just said. I just jammed the word together. That was anyway and something
See,
else.
See, isn't that fun?
Woo! I just jammed the word together. But anyway, guys, welcome back to the show. If you're tuning in, I am Scott, and that is Mike there. And each week we try to bring on some interesting guests, and this week is no different. And then we also try to, we just try to bring a little bit of entertainment and some insights and whatnot. So if you're tuning in, welcome to the show. This is episode 217, Berlow.
It's been a long ride, my friend.
It is. Sometimes I look at like how long it's been going, and I'm kind of surprised myself.
I just realized by the end of the year, officially, you and I would do 200 episodes together.
Well, we still got time, pal.
John, I'm only 3 podcasts away from retirement. Don't do this to me.
I never told you. You're still auditioning.
Oh. Oh, man. And I guess you got to do like 180 episodes with somebody else and all to like, you know, compare and contrast.
But it's kind of crazy. It's kind of crazy to think that it's been basically half a decade almost that this has been going on. 5 years of this show, and talk to a lot of people. One day we'll get a website on that has like a almost like a index of all the different guests we've talked to. So it'll be like
yeah.
So one of these days, but you know.
Well, I got the spreadsheet. I mean, that's just as good as a website.
Yeah, well, just
in that it lists them, and nobody else sees it other than you and me. But still, just as good as a website.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But last week, guys, if you tuned in, we talked to Ed and Riley Breckenridge from the band Thrice. So if you are into them, and if you're not into them and you've never heard them, go check them out. Their new album just came out, but I really enjoyed that episode too. But onwards and upwards, Mike Berlow. Let's see.
New debauchery for the week.
Yes, October is here. Tends to be my favorite month of the year. You know, it's crisp and fall like. Actually, it's pretty hot today, but the leaves are starting to turn. Pumpkin, everything has arrived.
You know it.
The Walking Dead is unfortunately coming, and I know I'm going to waste probably another. How many episodes are in season 12? Another 12 hours of my life, and probably feel just as miserable and empty after watching a season, but that's coming back too. The Giants season's over, so that was that was fun. NFL was fun. Now on to hockey.
Yeah. Oh, also, both of our baseball teams left the stratosphere this week, so.
Yeah. I was going to get into that in just a minute. You guys had a good season, though. You can't be upset. You're on the up and up. You were in it.
Yeah, I'm perfectly fine with the season. It's pretty amazing. A lot of Philadelphia fans are like, I'm on a different side, and they are like screaming, "We blew it. This was ours." Blah blah blah. And I keep on coming back to them with, you know, we're probably most prognosticators were probably putting us at low 70s. We almost made 500. We were 80 and 82. We were in it for the longest time. And as I keep reminding people, is do you really think World Series time and this team goes up against Boston, Houston, New York?
Nope.
If we are
Cleveland,
we'll say we're close. We only lost that game by 5 runs. That would be the best case scenario in any of the 4 games. There is zero possibility to win the World Series. It's not like when your guys went in 2015 where you sat back and said, we got a young nucleus, we're on our way up, and we can build off it. And not to say, I mean, unfortunately, some injuries came here and there and so forth, but that was a building block. Anybody from the NL goes in there that's young is going to get defeated heavily. It's probably going to set back that young team for quite a while.
Yeah, most likely. I mean, it certainly seems the NL is taking it. I mean, the AL is taking it this year. Some very strong teams. I still, from the beginning, said Houston's repeating. I don't see that team is so loaded. It's ridiculous. Every player they bring up is like is crushing home runs. Like it's crazy, but. I would say the Phillies are on the up and up, obviously, and they got some pieces in place, unfortunately, for me. But the Mets are, you know, who knows with the Mets what's going to happen. New GM, you know. One thing they have going forward is they do have a pitching staff to build around, so it's not a complete rebuild, but it's going to take some finesse, that's for sure. But I wanted to get real quick, Saturday was a very sad moment for Mets fans.
They played again?
Yeah, they were broadcast live again.
No!
No, David Wright retired. David Wright, who has been ridiculously plagued with injuries, he retired. They gave him his one last game. I mean, out by the fourth inning, which just shows you how beat up that guy is, man. I mean, your last game, he could have got at least 3 at-bats and gone out, but fourth inning, they take him out, which the whole plan was to take him out early, obviously, to get his curtain call and But God, man, that's a tough one. That was a franchise that, I mean, a couple teams there that just never got the job completely done. Like in 06, I thought that was the year when when Andy Chavez made that catch against the wall, over the wall. I thought the Mets were the prime to go and win the World Series. That team was stacked. More importantly, David Wright is I don't know anybody that hates David Wright. You could hate him as an enemy as far as a team that you play, but I don't know anyone that ever had a problem with the guy. He was just a class act from start to finish.
Yeah, as a Phillies fan, I never had an issue. I mean, clearly he had some big hits where it's like, oh, but I mean, I never sat back and said that guy's an a-hole. I never sat back and said, oh, that hit was lucky. The guy had extreme talent, and it's a killer thing where, I mean, the spine injury, you almost want to sit back and wish he had to end because, oh, my knees are going, or something like that,
yep.
Like that, where you go, yeah, you're 30-something, you can't really, it's not going to rehab that great. You go out being the warrior that you are, versus something where you go, oh, God, there's really nothing you can do, and he tried like hell to come back. I mean, I jokingly said I don't blame him, keep on coming back, because my wife Isabel was a huge Mets fan. She kept on going, just retire. I'm like, hey, as long as he shows up, he gets what did he make, like $10 million a year or something? Something like that.
Well, they took insurance out on him, and he was over the $20 million mark as far as if he played. So, but they had insurance, so yeah. He got paid out of something. But
yeah, but the point is, the second you say I retire, the Mets go, oh, thank you, and hold on to that money. The second you show up and go, let's see if we can do something, they had to pay him. But a great player. Sad to see great players go.
Yeah.
I kind of had a debate with the girl. She says Hall of Fame. I say Mets Hall of Fame.
Not even close to Hall of Fame. It's not even he's not even on the radar.
It's like Chase Utley. I mean, he's going to be very close to the team. You put him in the Wall of Fame. You might do the silent retirement of the number for a while, as in you don't put his plaque out there, but like for a few years, anybody says, can I have number 5? No, we're not getting it out.
As far as in-house, David Wright, I bet you his number will be retired.
You do think so?
I think so. Just because of even just the PR of it. I mean, he's a lifelong Met. He holds all the Met statistics. He leads the Mets in home runs, hits, runs. He pretty much leads everything. He played 15 years, whatever it was, as a Met, just a Met. And he was a fan favorite for basically two decades decade and a half. I definitely see it happening. I'm pretty strict with numbers retired, and I'd be okay with this one. I think he was that generation. He was that 06 team. You know, he got to a World Series. He was our, you know, the whole comparison was always he's our Derek Jeter because the way he carried himself. You know, he was a very classy, charitable, sitting in front of his locker every game. All those bad Met teams. You know, he's there every day taking interviews. I see him numbers wise, he doesn't even have close to the numbers to be Hall of Fame. He didn't have long enough career. He's injured too much at the end. He wasn't able to compile. He's not even at 2,000 hits.
He's got no prayer. No. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of weird. Like I look at the Phillies that group we had for 5 years. Like I can't see a retirement. I mean, a lot of people talk about Jimmy Rollins. And Jimmy Rollins is kind of weird. He has all the numbers where I could say retire his number. But there was always something a little off, and I can't put my finger on it.
Because he was a jerk
like
off?
He was, well, I mean, the funny thing was he was the one that got Philadelphia psyched about the Phillies. Like, I think, I forget it was in 06 or 07, but I remember him getting interviewed on ESPN, and he's like, everybody's laughing about the Phillies doing something. What do they talk about? We can do this. We got a team. And that started getting people psyched, and we won the pennant the one year, and then the following year we got the World Series, and then we had that string of making the playoffs and so forth. he's definitely got better numbers than Chase Utley. But if anybody, you ask anybody who's your favorite player, everybody's saying Utley.
Yeah,
Howard, Utley was got the injury bug, and that's why he's out of the conversation. He should have had like 400 some home runs, but
Utley was the face of that team. The guy that everyone recognizes, the, you know, well spoken,
blue-collar, exactly, the world fucking champion speech when they won. Yep. I mean,
yeah, but, I see him. I see him getting his number retired. Hall of Fame? I don't know. Probably not. But I did want to say, so David Wright retires. I loved the guy. I was always a big fan. You feel sad for him. The Mets actually did something right for once. They, no pun intended, but they did it right. They brought him there, one game in a season that didn't mean anything. They had his daughter throw out the first pitch, which was pretty cool. You know, his little, like, 4-year-old daughter throws out the first pitch to him. They had him come up to the announcer booth halfway through the game. They had him speak at the end. So they really, you know, they did it the right way. But what I wanted to use that as a segue real quick before we get to our guest. I don't usually go online and go after people. I don't really get into people. But I don't know if it's just, I'm just sick of trolls. Like, people who just literally spend their time making people miserable on the internet. If you like something, if Berlew posts, like, man, the World Series of Cricket was really exciting. I watched it. There's going to be someone like, ugh, I don't watch that. Like, I wouldn't watch that. I didn't see what – I love people who post, didn't see 1 minute of the Masters or whatever it is. Like, when if something – somebody's excited about something, there has to be the other – the small percent of people that have to post how cool it is to hate that. You know what I mean? Like, ugh, didn't watch any of that. Okay, well, why are you posting that? People should be able to enjoy something, you know? I don't care what you're into. So I go on Instagram, and I look at the little Mets thing, and, you know, everyone's just like, thanks, Captain, you know, congratulations, what a nice ceremony by the Mets, blah, 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 blah. And one of the posts, there's just someone that just writes, F you, David Wright. I'm like, okay. So I just commented, like, I said, what are you doing on here? I said, like, what are you doing on here? Why are you commenting them like that? Why are you hating, like, why there's a bunch of, like, why are you trolling people while there's a lot of people just posting fun stuff? Like, I said, all you're doing is looking for attention. And he goes back and forth, and he's like, oh, dude, like, what do you mean? Why do you care so much of my opinion? I said, I don't care about your opinion at all. I said, but why are you posting it here? Like, why are you posting, like, that when everyone is just a positive post? I said, and it's one of those accounts where there's, like, 2 followers, and it's just obviously the guy that just goes on these things and tries to get rise out of people. And I just, like, had it, and I just, like, went at him, and it was funny because, like, a couple people commented, like, Verbal Shenanigans win, and then the other guy's name lost. It was pretty funny. Like, everyone was kind of joining in on it, but very annoying. And I really think we've talked about it before, but that's the part of social media that has really, we are completely divided as a country, as we already know with all the Kavanaugh stuff going on. It's just, I mean, I don't care what you think, who you believe. I mean, people are so insensitive. They don't even care. So say this woman did get raped or sexually harassed or whatever you want to call it, held down for it. Say she did. People would just sit there and blindly be like, well, she's a liar. I saw one person comment like, oh, what a tramp. I'm like, what a tramp? Like, what if this woman is telling the truth, which is, it seems like a good percentage or could be. What are we're going to just have no humanity at all. We can't just be like, well, in the gray area, like in the middle where you're like, I'm not sure who I believe, but obviously it's a pretty heavy topic. Even if you don't believe her, there's been a lot of women that have gone through this exact situation just to make, like, whatever. She's a Democrat side, so she must be lying. It's just so bizarre to me.
Well, I mean, let's look at it. Let's go to your statement of tramp. The most hilarious thing is it's either A, she's lying, which means she didn't have sex with him and she's not a tramp, she's a liar at best, or anything like that, or somebody who's on the left wing or whatever you want to call it, but not a tramp. If she's telling the truth, you just called a rape victim a tramp.
Exactly. Well, that's exactly most, it's so disgusting.
It's the most idiotic thing on the planet. I mean, this case will always be too hard to tell. I mean, where it boils down to, going on the political side, I mean, everybody just pissed off, we had a Supreme Court justice that should have been put in by a Democrat. Everybody forced the holdoff where they wouldn't allow the guy in, and then a Republican won, so they gained that seat.
Yep.
This one technically is not one to quote-unquote win because it was basically a conservative judge that's going out and they're putting a conservative judge in. It's not really adding in any direction in this case. But in any way, it's kind of funny how passionate everybody is about, he needs to be the judge or whatever. If you think about it, we really shouldn't have any judges that we say conservative, liberal. They should be the most wild card people on the planet. It's not to make a joke of it, but literally, it should be something where you go, wow, I can't believe that happened, because it's supposed to be 100% independent, looking at the situation, looking at our rules, looking at our laws, and making a determination off of that. That should not be, in the back of my head, I'm for or against abortion or anything of that sense. So it's,
yep.
It's just very sad how, the people are supposed to be, basically the last line, the tiebreaker. As much as everybody's saying, well, he should be the judge because he's a good person, it's like, no.
Not only that.
He's the judge because he believes what you think is correct.
Not only that.
What's good for the country.
How can you be so passionate about this guy? Tell me one person that knew anything about this guy before he was nominated.
No.
The average Joe. I stay almost completely out of politics. I don't know anything, okay, until it's like a story and it presents it, and then I kind of I form my opinion and I kind of keep it to myself generally. But why would you support someone so blindly when I guarantee a month ago you never heard this guy's name, okay? Unless you're the most tuned in, unless political science is your thing, like politics is your thing, maybe you heard of this guy. No way have as the average Joe heard of it. Let's stop pretending we all are tuned into every person they bring up. Don't tell me, even when people bring up the vice president, whoever the next vice president is, nobody knows who that is usually unless it's some big name. But, I mean, it brings me to, real quick before we get to our guest, I had sent you one of our favorite comics, if you can call him that. There was a guy up there, he is just unapologetically saying this woman is lying. And then he was putting up things blah, 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 stole a candy bar in high school. Should we arrest them now? I'm like, are you comparing, are you saying that because this it may or may not have happened, whatever, 30 years ago, that it's not wrong now? There's a statute of limitations on being a creepy rapist? You're comparing that to, petty crimes that, we joke about? It's not even close. And I mean, his quote was, if one man is guilty, all men are guilty. No, not at all. I have never, ever put a woman in a weird place like that. Okay. I was raised a little better. I've never been in that situation. We cannot pretend that everyone does this. It's that is bizarre. And this guy is bizarre. So,
yeah, I mean, we won't give out this person's name. There's no reason to give him any attention. I mean, we've dealt with him in previous places, and this guy is an in-your-face walking troll. He's just literally, if you say water is wet, he tries to say, well, I'm a scientist, and it's only your skin that thinks it's wet, but in essence, it's blah, 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 blah. on an off-cusp thing, I'm not going to go into the story. You know the famous story I know about with a fellow comedian and how he got ripped off by somebody else.
Yes.
And I was on a trip with said troll.
Yeah.
And I actually got to...
It's called Super Troll.
Yeah. So I talked to the Super Troll, and we had good general conversation. I kind of got a little bit of an insight. And, in my head, I'm like, wow, I don't like the way he talks in certain situations and all, but I'm actually seeing a human side to this guy. And it was very interesting because it was
a
6-hour
Yeah, exactly. Back. You know why? Because there was no attention to be had.
Yeah.
It was you, and he had to put that guard down, that fake wall that these people and people tend to put up, and they got to be right, and they want attention. There was no attention to be found. It was you, him, and one other dude in the middle of, what, West Virginia or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah, and that other dude was detained somewhere. So right. It was just me and him. And at first I'm like, wow, I mean, now I've seen a different side of him. You know, maybe I can have more conversation with him and I'll get have more a general idea of who he is and what he is. And second, we got back into situations, like you said, where there's an audience, wham, yeah. that side comes out. And it's just like, I just asked myself, what do you gain by this? Like, even if you got like 20 people say, yeah, you're right, blah, 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 you're so smart, blah, 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 you still go home and have nothing else but that. You have Facebook popularity. It's the last thing on earth anybody should gain to be, you know?
Although, if you follow us, that we could use some Facebook popularity.
That's Facebook popularity that works for everybody. Now, liking Verbal Shenanigans on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, but not Super Troll.
No.
Don't find at Super Troll and like him.
I could talk about this for a while, but I don't think we need to. We'll get back into that another week and whatnot, and more troll stories. Maybe I'll do a Troll of the Week segment. All right, Berlew, it is guest time, our favorite time, as per usual, our favorite time, which means it's time of the show where we no longer have to talk to each other. We get to talk to somebody else.
Yeah. We call it the buffer reality, and it's something we thrived on. I mean, after about 10 episodes together, it's like, nah, this ain't going to work, and we annoy too many people to keep a constant third person around. So.
Right. So if you guys don't know, the secret to the show is the first 15 minutes is me and Mike just, you know, really straining to get to that 15-minute mark, the 20-minute mark, and then the guest comes on, it's like a sigh of relief. And then the rest of the show is completely scripted. We write it out on cue cards. We read right off of them. For instance,
a studio audience too. It's amazing.
Yeah, like for instance, I'll show you what we're in tune for later. Like, okay, reader number one, Mike, you do your part. I'll do mine. Right.
Okay.
What did you think of the guest, Mike?
I thought he was very good.
It's amazing that after 200 episodes, we still find interesting people.
Yes, no matter how many times we go out for guests, we keep on coming back with more and more who are interesting.
If only you were interesting. Ha, 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 ha. Oh, I wasn't supposed to read that part. That was a laugh break.
Funny.
It's a laugh break. But anyway, so coming on the show a couple months ago, we had one of our highest performing episodes was with Rab himself from Viva La Bam, CKY, Jackass, all them. And we had a really good interview with him. And now Rab has his own podcast, so go check that out. But today we got Brandon Novak on the show, who Brandon was also part of the CKY crew. Brandon's a part of the Jackass crew. Brandon's put out a couple books. He really lately has been doing a lot of promotion, talking about sobriety and some of the things that some of the demons he's really been through over the years. So I'm excited to talk to him, the one and only Brandon Novak. So let's give him a call.
Hey, brother, how are you?
Hey, Brandon, how's it going? It's Scott.
Hey, Scott, what's up, man?
Nothing, man. Let me just merge in my co-host real quick. Hold on. Brandon, can you hear Mike? Mike? Brandon?
I am here.
Yo.
All right. Brandon, first off, I want to thank you for giving us just a little bit of your time. We really appreciate talking to you, man.
Absolutely, man. Likewise.
That's awesome. We were just saying right before we brought you on the air here, we were lucky enough to talk to Rab about, I don't know, maybe it was about 3 or 4 months ago. And it, just a really fascinating interview. You know, it's really cool. We got to kind of, you know, break past the Jackass stuff and the CKY stuff and really kind of get to the root of, I guess, Rab. And, you know, like, it made me want to talk to more of you guys. And, you know, I really saw a lot of your stuff popping up lately as far as things with your sobriety and some of your videos and whatnot. So I'm very happy to talk to you today, man.
Yeah, man. I'm grateful you guys were interested enough in hearing about it. I'm grateful. Who the fuck, to be honest with you?
Yeah. So where are we calling you at? Where are you still? Are you still on the East Coast? Are you still in Pennsylvania?
I live in Philadelphia. Yeah.
All right. Well. That's unfortunate, but no.
Yeah, I'm from Baltimore originally. Live in Philly now. Just bought a new house, so that's pretty rad.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah, my hands full there. That's where I dwell.
So let me ask you. So I guess the best part would be to start at somewhat towards the beginning. When you guys were putting all the CKY stuff and the videos out. Did this start as just like you guys trying to make each other laugh? Was it one person's idea and you guys kind of like connected onto it, or was it like a group idea that you guys really started to push forward?
No, I mean, the beautiful thing about it was like no one had a plan or a direction or an agenda. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It was really just a bunch of dudes hanging out, kids hanging out. And we were all so different in our own right that, like, we all found something really funny about each other, you know what I mean? Or right. A million things funny about each other. We'd, you know, make fun of each other, laugh at each other, play off each other's, you know, differences. And we kind of lived in our own world, literally, you know? So, like, fuck, like, why not? Let's just film it. And then Bam started filming it, still with, like, no direction, no end goal, just thought it'd be hilarious filming his buddies, you know, do different shit. And then I think, you know, he just kind of came up with it, like, then fell in love with editing, and then he edited the video, and, you know, and then kind of decided he was going to put it out. But it was never a thing as a kid, like, we're going to make these movies and become famous. That was the last one on our minds.
Was there a goal for you to be a career skateboarder? Because I've read up how you won your first skateboard at a skating contest and getting to meet like a hero like Bucky Lassick. And was your overall dream going to be, I'm going to be a professional skateboarder?
Yeah, that's all I gave a fuck about. You know what I mean? I did not care about anything else. I got my first skateboard at the age of 7. And that night when my mother put me to bed, she said, Brandon, what do you want me to do with the skateboard? I said, I want it in bed with me. She said, why? I said, because if I die, I want it to come with me. It was like God had came down and handed me the Holy Grail in the form of a skateboard. Once that board touched my head at the age of 7, I knew I was going to be a professional skateboarder. I ate it, I breathed it, I slept it, I dreamt it. At 15, I was designing my pro model for Pal Peralta, you know, touring the world with Tony Hawk.
Right.
At the age of 14, I was the first skateboarder ever in the world to be endorsed by Gatorade.
They really?
Fly me down. Chicago, Quaker Oats building. They put me on one treadmill, Michael Jordan on a treadmill next to me, and they put these like wires down our throats and in our noses, and they would give us each Gatorade to see the effects that it has on different sports players.
Are you serious? Wow.
Wow.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah, like, therefore, like, schooling wasn't important. A plan B, a trait, that didn't fucking matter. I was going to be a professional skateboarder. A trait that I possessed then at that young age, which transcended into my drugging careers, was that, like, despite any and all adverse consequences that came my way, I always did what I had to do to always get what I always wanted.
You kind of segue into kind of what I was going to say next. Like, did you find that, like, skate culture, like you said, school, whatever, skate culture, and then once the CKY stuff, which – you know, is almost like a environment, I assume, where it's like who can kind of, it's almost like trying to top each other, you know, who can make funnier, who can do something almost, you know, crazier to the next guy or make a better, a funnier stunt. Does right. that feed right into, like, did that lead directly into the drugging, or did the drugs start separately and then those worlds combine?
Well, I think it kind of all plays off one another. Like, you know, there was no accountability in my life, right? Like, I didn't have to report to a 9-to-5 job. I didn't have a boss. I didn't have to be in when the streetlights went on. You know, my boss was my team captain, who was in Santa Barbara, California. And how I checked in with him was calling him, you know, once a week, every other week to order product. and like tell them about new tricks that I had learned, right? So that was my boss, and that's how I checked in. And then my coworkers were a bunch of fucking anywhere from the ages of 17 to 25, 30, maybe even 40-year-old men that skateboarded. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, like, you know, I believe I was genetically predisposed to the disease of addiction or alcoholism, if you will. My father's father was an alcoholic. My father was an alcoholic. Go figure. I became an alcoholic. So, you know, once they, you know, those guys were partying, they would go out to bars, to nightclubs.
And right.
I would go along with. They would sneak me in. I'd get a fake ID. They knew someone that worked at the door. So I just would start partying with them. But parties, like, they were just normal. I didn't, at that time, I still didn't care about, I wasn't the kid that suffered with, like, lack of inhibition or lack of motivation, low self-esteem, right? Like, I wasn't the kid that walked in class 20 minutes late in fear that everyone was staring at him. I was more like the kid that walked in class 20 minutes late thinking that everybody was waiting for him. Right? Like, I had goals, I had dreams, I had ambitions. My mother was a nuclear physicist on the board of Mercy Hospital. My brother is an attorney in the White House who practices pensions and benefits.
Wow.
My father died as a direct result of the disease of addiction. He smoked crack cocaine and his body shut down finally. So, like, I live with that after-school special of what I was not going to become. I disliked that man, and I hated drugs and alcohol even more because I saw what it made him do firsthand to me, to my mother, to my brother, to my sister.
Right.
So, therefore, like, I always swore I would never become that man. Ironically enough, I became that man at the end. And I just, once, like I said, I was genetically predisposed, I believe, and once, like, once I started drinking a lot, and I can't tell you about that first time I had that drink, and I felt like I had arrived, like the fucking sea, the skies, like, opened up for me.
Right.
It just happened. But then once it happened, it took control of me, and I lost the right or privilege to, like, stop on my own because I'm an alcoholic, you know? And people thought, because I was so successful at such a young age, I had did things already that people equated to success or happiness, some even dream of doing, that, like, I had a good head on my shoulders and I would know when to call it off. And like I said, there was no accountability. My father was a drug addict. My mother worked her ass off to provide for us. My brother and sister watched me, and I spent all my time skateboarding. So, you know, when I wasn't skateboarding, they thought I was skateboarding, even though I was out drinking and drugging.
Wow.
But by the time that noose had, like, tightened up around my neck, I was kind of too far gone to be, like, easily saved, you know?
Mm. Let's talk a little bit about, like, when the movies, the Jackass movies come out and everything. Is it almost, when you're playing these stunts, is almost euphoric how people are treating you and how you're acting to it? Because, like, one set I remember of yours was the Doodoo Falls, where you go down a ramp on a toilet and you look pretty damn injured from it.
Yeah.
But off of that, I mean, it must be that night after people hear about, oh man, that's awesome, let me buy you a beer, tell me about it, blah blah blah. It must have been like a never ending cycle.
Absolutely. So you take the before and after, right? So at the end of my drinking and drug career, right, even during this time, not too long before the Jackass stuff, because I was always in and out and doing good and doing really bad. But when I'm doing really bad, what really bad looks like is I'm homeless in Baltimore City. I stand on the corner of East Avenue and Patterson Park, and I sell my body for $40 to anybody that will buy. I'm shooting up heroin and cocaine on a daily basis. I'm doing whatever it takes to get $10 more to get another bag, right? Then all of a sudden, Bam decides to give me another shot. I go back up to Westchester. I get myself together. Now I'm thrust into these movies, Jackass. I'm doing the stunts that no one else wants to do, right?
Right.
Because for me, it's like, it's a no fucking brainer. I've been living on the streets of Baltimore, sleeping in abandoned houses, shooting up all day, letting men blow me for money. Like, you can't get worse than that. So any stunt you say, I'll do. Not to mention, it gets me on TV, which gets me a celebrity status, and it provides a great paycheck at the end of the day. fuck, that's a no-brainer. And then being the addict that I am, if I get hurt, fuck yeah, because now I go to the hospital, they prescribe me a shit ton of meds, and no one will get mad at me for being high because I was prescribed them by the doctor. You know what I mean?
Wow, yeah.
All the way around the board. And then the more I go out, the more people see me, the more people know who I am. They want to give me drugs. They want to buy me drinks. You know, I use it all to the advantage of my addiction.
Wow. Wow.
So then at the end, I find myself a 35-year-old homeless heroin addict living back in my mother's house. My worldly possessions, everything I own in this world, consists of 8 scarves, 2 jackets, 3 socks, 1 stick of deodorant, fits into a bag that doubles as a pillow. One day I hear a knock at the door. It's the police. My mother called the police on me. They served me with a restraining order. They kicked me out of the house. I have now all I own at 35 years old, right? I'm a former professional skateboarder. I've been in movies that break box office records. I'm a New York Times selling author. At the end, I'm a 35-year-old homeless heroin addict who's now been in 12 inpatient treatment centers. I've lost count of outpatients and detoxes. My mother has bought me a plot. People have taken life insurance policies out on me. I just woke up from being on life support for 7 days. I'm the kind of alcoholic that wants to kill himself on a daily basis, but I don't want to hurt myself in the process. I'm horrible at suicide because I keep waking up. I'm at a point in life where I'm so low the curb is a skyscraper. And I just wake up from being on life support for 7 days. There's a knock at the door. The police serve me a restraining order. I'm now I'm standing out front. All I own in this world, my worldly belongings, 8 scarves, 2 jackets, 3 socks, 1 stick of deodorant, fits into a bag, doubles as a pillow, 4 cigarette butts that I've just picked up off the ground, a needle, a spoon, and a restraining order. You know, and that's where that life got me.
Wow. Wow. Mm. You paint such a rosy picture.
Yeah. That's where my deal takes me when I think that, like, I have things under control. So what I did was, whole bunch of more serious events had taken place, but I walked into my 13th inpatient treatment center, God willing, my last one ever. And for the very first time, I was finally demoralized in just such a fashion from drugs and alcohol. I was beat into a state of reasonableness that they had my attention. And I had been to the same previous treatment center 4 times out of the 13. And each 4 of those previous times, I'd sit in the same chair with the same intake coordinator. And she'd say, okay, Mr. Novak, your insurance covers 90 days. And I'd say, in theory, 90 days sounds great. But in reality, I'm more of like a 45-day kind of fellow. I have this woman to do, this job to fulfill, this state to go to. And she would laugh at me each and every time and say, sweetheart, you have no idea. Anything and everything that you put in front of your recovery does not or will not matter because you will lose it. This time, I'm sitting in the same chair with the same woman. When she gives me that offer, the same offer she's given me 4 previous times, I can't even come back with a counter offer because I've been speechless by my disease of addiction. If I say no, that entails an explanation. So all I could do was shake my head yes. She says, sweetheart, you're in no condition to do your intake. Get up to detox. I'll see you in 4 days. I get up to detox. There's this, like, 19-year-old chipper, like, real happy-go-lucky tech work. And he goes, Mr. Novak, you're back. I said, aren't you a fucking genius? Like, you don't miss a beat, do you? And he said, see, what happened was I got robbed, and all the clothes were, like, literally on that I had on were tied on by shoestrings. My shirt was tied up by a shoestring. My pants were tied up by a shoestring. I had these shoes on with literally 1 shoestring in them, and I didn't have any underwear on. So my dick and my ass were, like, flailing completely about. And he says, your clothes are not rehab-oriented. You need some underwear. You need some sweatpants. You need some slides. And I didn't own any of that shit. He said, come downstairs to the donations box. Now, I'm standing in the basement of this Catholic Charities rehab that cost me $3 to get into. I've now walked into the same facility 4 different times today. And something very imperative happened in the basement of that Catholic Charities rehab, because as he thumbs through the boxes looking for a pair of used underwear, he doesn't find them. But what he finds is a pair of size 40 women's sweatpants with no drawstring. He finds a woman's tank top and a pair of size 13 Jesus sandals. Now, I don't know how alert or attentive anybody is, but I'm not a woman and I don't wear a size 13. But something very important happened in the basement of that Catholic Charities rehab. The God of my understanding showed up in the form of a gift of desperation. And when I met the God of my understanding in the form of a gift of desperation, I experienced a sense of willingness unlike anything I had ever experienced in my life. I go upstairs, I get a shower, I get that Baltimore City smell off me. I was never so happy to put these women's clothing on. I successfully complete that 90-day treatment center. In that 90-day treatment center, I learned that my mentality will create the reality for which I live in. And if I change my perception, I can change my world, and that my defects could become my biggest assets with a shift of perception. I successfully completed that 90-day treatment center. I go to a sober living house for 1 year. I had been on parole and probation from 16 years old to 35, never a free day in between. A year and a half into my process of sobriety, I signed my release papers. I was literally a free man. I could go anywhere with anybody, anytime I like. I decided I wanted to get my 2-year medallion abroad. I flew out to Paris to get my coin. I no longer live in that self-induced prison that consists of a 4-block radius that cost me $10 to get out of on a daily basis. That very same mother that served me with a restraining order, that very same mother that bought me a plot, that very same mother that took life insurance policies out on me, called me 9 months into my process of sobriety. She said, "Brandon, I hate when you come to visit." I said, "Why?" She said, "Because I get so sad when you leave." You know, I took her to go see Rod Stewart last month in Florida. I flew her down. I got her backstage to meet like her. I took her on a cruise, you know. Sobriety has truly given me everything the drugs and alcohol promised me. Today, as I talk to you, I'm over 3.5 years sober, and I'm standing in a house that I just bought. You know, that's a far stretch away from where I walked in to my 13th inpatient treatment center, May 25th, 2015. And what was different this time as opposed to all the other times, every time I walked into a facility, I always had a plan. Right. And what I learned after doing a lot of internal work on myself, a plan is basically the same thing as an expectation. And all expectations are is unfulfilled resentments. So the moment you don't do as I think you should do, say as I think you should say, or feel as I think you should feel, I'm automatically fucking furious. So for the first time, I was beaten so bad by drugs and alcohol, I walked into my 13th inpatient treatment center with no plan. And that lack of plan has produced the best of plans. Because what I found is the common denominator in my problems is me, my thinking, my attitude, my behavior. So it allowed me to get the fuck out of my way and say, okay, what I do know is that I don't fucking know. And my very best thinking gets me here. So clearly I don't know, but you people do know because you're staying sober. So can you show me how? You know, and now like I have a life, I mean, it's so cliche, but beyond my wildest dreams.
Well, first off, obviously, congratulations for getting your stuff together, man. Thank God I don't battle the same demons that you do. I think it's very admirable to be so open and talk about these things and you know, show your scars and whatnot. So I think it's very important not only for people just to hear your story, but for people that are going through similar things to know that other people have been where they are. So I think it's very admirable that you are able to talk like this openly about what you've gone through.
Yeah, because here's the reality, right? As addicts and alcoholics, what that looks like is that we're defiant by nature, we hate authority, and we will not conform unless it becomes our idea, right? So you tell us what we need to do, we tell you why you need to fuck off because we know. And right now, they talk about this opioid epidemic. It's not an epidemic. It's a pandemic. Today in the nation, 179 people will die as a direct result of an opioid overdose. That's worse than the Vietnam War. That's worse than the peak of the AIDS outbreak or HIV outbreak. And the sad thing is all these deaths are preventable. So what I do is I live this really, what might appear to be fucking really rad life. And people are like, that's that guy that was deemed unhelpable, unfixable. If he can get clean, there's no reason why I can't. And then they call me, and then I help them. So what that looks like is attraction rather than promotion, you know?
Now, let me ask you, when, you know, like I said, we talked to Chris, and, you know, we've heard stories with Bam and a lot of the crew and whatnot. When you came, you know, when you were going through your problems, and it seemed like you had a lot of problems early on, and then it seemed like the other guys also seemed to develop their own problems and whatnot. Did everybody's addictive personalities and addiction all push each other to do worse things, or was it like everybody kind of went through things at different stages? And one, were you able to help each other, or were you guys completely toxic when you were together?
We were pretty much just completely toxic.
You know? Right.
There's like, Yeah. There was no, you know, we were all, you know, doing whatever each one of us was doing. I can't speak for what anyone else was doing.
Right.
You know, yeah, we were all doing our whatever. And so therefore, there was really no sensible thoughts or decisions taking place during that time.
What about now? What about now when you guys talk to each
now
other?
Now it's fucking great. Dude, now it's rad, man. Steve-O, he's sober as shit. When I'm out there, I go to, like, meetings with him. Wee Man sober.
Yeah.
You know, Steve-O just ran a marathon the other day. Quit smoking. I'm, like, in the process of quitting smoking. I'm on that Chantix. I'm down to one cigarette a day.
Beautiful.
You know, I go to the gym. I run 3 miles. Rap sober as fuck.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds cliche. It's the same, but it's like what all the cool people are doing.
it's just so funny that, like, you know, not funny, but it's really cool to see that all you guys, like, you know, you had the world, it fell apart, and now you're kind of all seem to be putting it back together again and kind of having a clear outlook.
Yeah, man. Life is beautiful.
Now, is it hard? Because I'm sure anytime somebody sees you or with the other guys, they want to bring up, when is Jackass coming back? Is there a next one? Is that kind of hard to look at considering where everybody was at when these movies were made?
No. I don't even really think about it, you know. There's like a billion things going on in the world. I don't really have time to, like, focus or think on that or dwell about that, you know? I was so far out of my fucking mind, it's not like I really have a lot of memories.
I was actually going to ask you. That was one of the questions I had written down. Do you remember a lot of all that stuff? Whether it's Viva La Bam or Jack, do you remember that time period?
Some of it I remember, but, like, yeah, most of it. My life has been a blur for, like, 15 years.
Wow.
Obviously, there's some things that stick out, but then there's some things that just don't.
Well, let me ask you, now that you have your sobriety and whatnot, and it seems to be that you're very open with it and speaking with people, what kind of things are you doing nowadays as far as, one, whether it be work or whatnot? And I know you are also speaking to people. How are you taking your sobriety and one, helping others, and two, what are you doing with your life currently right now that we don't know about?
I have a lot of different things going on. The first thing is I work in the drug and alcohol treatment field. I pretty much for a full time, I help people find help.
Nice.
I help people get treatment centers on a daily basis. And I give my personal phone number out for people to call me that are looking for a way up and out of their position. And that's where I'll do that here now. That phone number is 610-635-9092. So that's one thing I do. I travel all over the nation and the world for that matter. And I speak, motivational speaker. I tell my story, you know, colleges, rallies, high schools, wherever. I just had the first ever addiction graphic novel come out. I had another, my second book came out like 9 months or a year ago. My third one's being proofread as we speak. I have three more books that will be coming out following. I have a documentary called Where's My Needle that's going to the Sundance and the Cannes Film Festival. They're editing that as we speak as well. You know, and if anyone gives a shit, they could just go to my website and kind of see what I'm up to, and that's at BrandonNovak.com, all one word.
Do you have any parts still in skateboarding you keep track of it and all since that was your first love?
Yeah, dude, I still skate, absolutely. Unfortunately, my brain thinks that I'm like 17, but my body tells me that I'm 38. So, like, when I fall, I need a walker. Shit. You know. Yeah, but I do. I love it. Unfortunately, I don't get paid from it anymore, so I can't, like, do what I do used to do all the time and, like, get hurt and just lay up for a week. You know?
Now, are you able to look at old videos and stunts and things like that and watch them, or is it hard for you to look at?
I don't watch them. I didn't even watch them when they were happening. I just don't. I don't like them. I'm like the judge, jury, and executioner in my own mind, and I've been sentenced to death like a year ago. So I'm like a pretty big critic on everything, and I'll pick it apart. So I just don't watch anything.
Where do you see your life after this? Do you see yourself just staying and writing books, or do you see new opportunities coming up, or do you even know what's coming up for you?
Dude, I have no idea, man. I tell you, 2 days ago, I went out and I bought a bike, a pedal bike, like a fixed gear pedal bike.
Mm-hmm.
I'm quitting. I'm in the process of quitting smoking. I go to the gym and I run 3 miles every day. I do all this cardio. If you would have told me 6 months ago that I'd be starting to get into health and fitness, I'd say you're out of your fucking mind. You know what I mean? But I'm trying to, like, eating healthy. I'm taking supplements. So I have no fucking clue, you know, what I could be into or headed to. It's crazy, man. I just don't know.
Brandon, like I said, I think, one, it's very admirable for you to come on here and talk about things and do not only just come on here, but everywhere and spread your story and your word. If people want to go check out what you're working on or come say hi, or even I know you just gave your number on the air, which is amazing. Where can they go to check you out and get in touch with you?
They can go to my website, which is BrandonNovak.com, all one word. Yeah, and that kind of encapsulates everything and tells you where I'm at, what I'm doing, what I have going on, and all that shit.
I got to ask you one question before we go here.
Yeah.
We've been asking a lot of our guests. This has completely nothing to do with anything we've talked about here, but you're an East Coast guy. You're a pizza guy. You've had a lot of probably good pizza in your life. What are your feelings on either Hawaiian pizza or pineapple on pizza? Are you into it or are you not?
Not into it, man.
Come on, man.
Not into it. I love pineapples, too, but not on pizza. I don't like them hot.
There you go, Scott. What's that, the fifth or sixth?
Yeah, I'm starting to lose now. It's definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to like pineapple. I also like pineapple and jalapeno together on pizza. You should try it before you knock it.
Yeah, I'm also a creature of fucking habit, man.
You're like, I've tried enough bad things.
Yeah.
I'm like a guy that when I'm hungry, I just want to eat. I don't want to experiment. And then if I don't like it, then I got to make more food. You know what I mean? I know what I know, and I know what I don't know.
All right. I'll take the L again, Mike. Brandon, thank you so much for giving us a couple minutes, man. We really appreciate this, and good luck with everything you got going on.
I gotta take this call. Somebody calling for help.
All right, take care, buddy.
Later, bro.
Talking to him and Rab, and like it's kind of like the unspoken thing you knew was going on when you watched those shows. But
yeah,
it was never addressed on the actual show. Yeah, they drank beers occasionally, but you knew there was just more to it, and there was more in that world, and that these guys were dealing with things. And it's really interesting how a lot of them are all, you know, have gotten their life together. Thank God, you know, no one, you know, other than Ryan Dunn, who passed away in a car accident. Thank God, it seems like a lot of them have straightened out and are on the up and up, because you know. It's pretty rare when that many addicts actually do live, which is kind of crazy. So it's good for all the Jackass crew.
Yeah, I mean, they're all dealing with adrenaline, dealing with pain, dealing with a thousand different things. And then on top of it, add to it celebrity, where anywhere they went, it's like, here, take whatever you want. I love your stuff.
And, right. They're rock
stars. It sounds like what we said in the last interview, oddly, I could totally see somebody make almost like a comedy/drama about the history of Jackass. And I think if you get some good young actors in there, I think you can, I'm talking about award-winning stuff there, because there's so many layers and it's so astonishing. Pretty much the entire crew went through the same problems, and it almost, like you said, it almost went under the radar, because it wasn't like you heard every day, oh, this guy got busted for this, and this person got that. That only happened till after they were on, like, movie number two or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, and you got to think, it is that mentality of pushing and put who can top one, who can top the other. Okay, maybe I got to be higher or drunker to get through this stunt. Maybe I got to you know, figure something out, and how am I going to get through this nasty thing? Like, oh, well, if I'm high and numb to it, who cares? You know, like, and then I'm sure after they wrap up shooting, they're probably going out and they're staying up late and partying and going to the club and getting free drinks and bottle service and, hey, try this pill, try that. So it isn't just how much fame seems to always catch up to people. It sounds like Brandon was dealing with things before any of this happened. Whereas I think Chris, you know, I could be wrong by both of these, but Rabbit seemed like maybe his stuff started during the craziness of Jackass and Viva La Bam, if I remember correctly. But if you guys like that interview, please go check out the Chris Rabb one. I think it's like episode 190-something. We'll get that in just a minute. But check out both of them. And it's really interesting to kind of parallel these two guys. And so pretty cool. Pretty awesome to have Brandon on the show.
Definitely.
All right, buddy. What do you got?
Well, I got a little game for us tonight in celebration of spooky Halloween and kind of a throwback to an old episode of ours.
Wait. Can we go back to what you just said?
Sure.
In celebration of spooky Halloween?
Yeah. Is the month of Halloween or whatever you want to call it. It's October, baby.
Woo! Spooky Halloween. Our Halloween episode's coming, everybody, which is always one of our favorite ones. I think those are ones that people should always go back and listen to.
Yeah. Larry Zerner was last Halloween's guest. He played Shelly in Friday the 13th, Part 3.
I think that was two Halloweens ago. I think the last one was The Exorcist.
Exorcist, you are correct.
Oh, and Irony Singleton. I think we did a double Halloween release last year.
We did. Two-parter.
Yeah, Larry Zerner was way, way long ago. That might have been...
Yeah.
I don't know. We got to check it. Anyway, we're boring people. Here we go. Spooky Halloween.
Yeah, but we're going back to episode 70, Scott.
Going that was back, F- back, back.
FMK. You remember what FMK stands for, right?
Frederick Maurice Knowlton. We had him on the show. He was a very nice guy. I believe he was an archaeologist.
Carpenter.
No. Remember he did that thing with that thing?
Was he an archaeologist that put carpet in caves?
Yeah, forget. He carpeted. That's what it was. He carpeted caves.
Yeah. I mean, he was really into bear comfort when they hibernate.
Yeah.
So that was part of bear news.
Yeah, FMK. That's what he went by.
Yeah. But no, the ever fun game of guys that do with each other called Fuck, Marry, Kill. We do it a little differently on our show, and tonight's theme is a little extra different than our last episode. So in episode 70, I gave Scott a bunch of different stories about women. I told him to assume all the ladies were the same age, same look, same money, same everything, and he had to choose who'd he fuck, who'd he marry, who'd he kill. Tonight we're going to go a little darker. We're going to go with female serial killers, Scott.
Oh.
Yes.
I know you love to put me in these situations, and I always try to explain my thinking as I'm going through these things. So, all right, I'm in. So female, you're going to tell me, I guess, what they did.
I'm going to give you three ladies. We got four different sets I got here, and you decide who you're going to keep for a night of fun, who you're going to keep for the rest of your life, and who you're going to get rid of immediately for any reason you feel.
Let's do it.
All right.
Cue the spooky Halloween music. We got to get into that conversation again. We'll get into that again, the lack of Halloween music. Maybe I will drop a surprise. Maybe I'll make a Halloween song for the Halloween episode.
There we go.
All right. Go ahead.
All right. So this first category I'm calling home cooking, Scott.
Love home cooking.
Your first nominee is Tamara Samsonova. This is a Russian woman who murdered and ate 11 people and kept a diary where she detailed her crimes. She killed a friend, drugging her salad with sleeping pills and using a handsaw to dismember her while she was still alive.
Wow.
Yeah, that's bachelorette number one.
How many people?
Number two. You get three.
No, how many people did she eat?
11.
Okay, yeah. Got it. I'm taking notes here.
Okay, our second nominee is Leonarda Cianciulli.
I'm sure that's how you pronounce it. Go ahead.
I'm sure, too. Leonardo killed three women and made them into soap or tea cakes. Leonardo claimed they were human sacrifices to protect her children. She showed little remorse for her crimes as she helped the prosecution by correcting some details about the murders during her trial.
Mm-hmm. Now, were the soaps made from her children?
No. She made soaps and tea cakes out of people, but she killed them to protect her children.
All right. Apparently. Got it.
All right. And thirdly, we have Catherine Knight. Catherine worked in a slaughterhouse and chose to use her skills for use one night. She decided to put her skills to use killing and skinning her boyfriend. Some of his body parts had been prepared to serve to the victim's children with vegetables and gravy while his head appeared to be cooking in a pot of stew.
Jesus. Okay. All right, you're definitely bringing in October nice and dark here. I like it.
Yep.
I'm glad you didn't say this for Halloween. I don't want to scare people off too much. But, all right, so let me recap. We got the woman that ate 11 people. We got the one that killed a couple people and made them into soap. And then we got the woman that cooked her boyfriend up in the butcher shop.
The second one made him out of soap. And also tea cakes. Okay. So she also made food out of them.
All right, a lot of cooks here. A lot of home cooking here. Okay.
That's why the category is home cooking.
All right, so I'm going to marry Miss Soap. I'm going to marry Miss Soap.
Okay.
Whatever her name was.
Leonardo Yuli.
I'm going to marry her, one, because I like a cleanly woman. Now, I'm not the neatest of guys. I try. You know, my style is more like things get messy, then I go on a binge cleaning streak. Messy, and then a binge clean. But I also, a little fun fact about me, I really enjoy soap. Like different organic types of soap, and I've bought sheep's milk soap before. I buy a couple soaps at Wegmans every once in a while when I go. The farmer's market, I buy some soap. So this is a woman that at least part of her can keep me happy. And I mean, I'm not a big cake guy, so I can easily deny some human cake and just, you know, wait till the prosecutors figure that one out. So,
babe, I'm not that hungry. Just make me some more soap. I'm going to sit in the tub after and wait for you to murder that girl out there.
Right. And I mean, like, maybe human soap can clean a human really well.
Yeah. You are what you're made of. So.
Exactly. So I'm going to marry that broad. And now, this is a hard one because these people are both disastrous, awful people. Mm-hmm. I think I gotta kill. I guess the only reason I'm gonna go with kill the first woman, the one who killed 11 people. I'm just gonna go by sheer numbers. Okay, the woman. Who I guess I'm gonna have a sweet, passionate night of love with. She only killed her boyfriend, so maybe he was a dick. Maybe I got to chalk it up to just him being not a good guy, and like she boiled his head. So she got a little aggressive. Who can blame her? I can think of someone in my ex-past that I could boil her head. So you know what? I mean, like, it's, you know, we all mess up here and there, go a little too far, you know what I mean? But eating 11 people, I feel like it's her turn. I feel like it's her turn to be killed.
Yeah.
11. Yeah. 11 is one whole soccer team on the field.
Would you say that's overkill, Scott?
Oh, I want to see what you did. So that is my final answer. The woman who killed 11 people, her time is up.
All right. So you're going to have a passionate night with Catherine Knight and Mary Leonardo Ciancioli. Sorry, Tamara Samsonova. No deal for Scott.
Out.
All right. Our second category, potential bays throughout history. Your first nominee is Elizabeth Bathory.
Oh.
Known for her torture chamber, Elizabeth would jam pins and needles under fingernails of her victims, tie them down, smear them with honey, and leave them to be attacked by bees and ants. She was also known as the blood goddess. Elizabeth was rumored to bathe in the blood of her victims as a means of staying young and youthful looking.
I'm hoping that just like one of these girls is like also your ex-girlfriend, like somewhere in the past.
No.
Like you're like,
no,
and Leslie Smith, who I dated in seventh grade, never told this to the police before, but.
Yeah. I don't like to talk about my exes, you know, for certain reasons.
Gotcha.
Your second person is Ilse Koch, known as the Bitch of Bunchuan. Ilse liked to make household objects out of the skin of victims she tortured. She had a particular affinity for making skin with tattoos into lampshades.
That's like Ed Gein.
Mm. And finally, Darya Nikolovna Saltyakova. There we go.
I think the secret game to this game is you trying to pronounce these people's names.
Yeah. I should have picked some, like, Jane Doe's.
Or you could have just gave them a name that was, like, no one would know the difference. You could have been, Caitlin Smith.
So Darya is responsible for the torturous deaths of over 100 of her servants. Darya would begin hurling logs at them for various reasons, such as failing to clean the house to her satisfaction.
Mm.
She tortured children and pregnant women by beating them, breaking their bones, and ordering them to be left out in the forest naked. She was also known to pour boiling water over her victims. So, Scott, Elizabeth, Ilse, and Darya, FMK.
You're really not giving me too many outs in this game. All right, I just got to go with stream of thought here. Stream of thought, okay? The last woman, at least, she throws logs, and then, you know, I kind of like the outdoors, and I like fires, and she seems a little bit protective. So maybe she would protect me and fend off evildoers that are coming my way with logs and other apparent things. Now, I'm not so great about her torturing children, but I figure maybe if I don't have children with her, then maybe she'll just protect me. Okay?
Gotcha.
So I'm going to marry the log lady. Okay? I'm going to marry the log lady. Now, I'm going to kill Ill Scooch or whatever the hell her name is. Not into the making the skin things, really, really creepy. Doesn't sound like she's got anything that would bring any kind of spark to my life. It creeps me out more than the other three, for whatever reason. And it makes my skin crawl a little bit, and hopefully not into like a lamp. So I'm going to kill her, and I'm going to have a night of romance with the woman who tortures people, but you know what? She's into like honeys and bees and stuff. So maybe this could be some kind of strange erotic night for me.
And she's into cosmetics to keep herself youthful.
Right. So maybe I could turn her. Maybe she's not all bad. Maybe we can get into like, you know, just more like skincare instead of death.
Gotcha. All right. So Scott is going to have a lifetime with a log thrower. He's going to have a passionate night with people.
Lifetime with a log thrower. That's the name of a book.
He's going to have a night of passion with a blood goddess, and he's going to get rid of that person who makes homemade lampshades with tattoos on them.
Correct.
Gotcha. All right. Number three, a nurse's love is this category, Scott.
Nothing better.
So Britha Punte is her name. Punte ran a boarding house for elderly people before authorities learned she was drugging them, killing them, and stealing their money. Authorities found that 7 bodies were found buried in her backyard.
Hmm.
I think Obi is digging them up right now as we speak.
Yep.
There's Jane Topan. She was a nurse who experimented with drugs on her patients, leading to 31 confirmed deaths. Though she was suspected of killing over 100, when Topan was questioned, she stated she derived a sexual thrill from patients being near death, come back to life, and then dying again.
Jesus Christ, Berlew.
And then there's Janine Jones, a former pediatric nurse. Jones had 1 confirmed death, but possibly up to 90 infants and children in her care that died. Janine used injections of several drugs to cause the kids to get gravely ill, and she'd save them to gain praise with her bosses. So Scott, Doretha, Jane, Janine, FMK.
I can't do this one. This one is pretty much all three of them doing the exact same horrific things.
Well, the first one was with old people. Does that count for anything?
Oh, God. No. Oh, they were nurses, too? That's so creepy. I cannot even make a connection right now to amuse this. Okay, fine. I'm going to... Who's the one that killed 100 kids or 100 people? Number two, right?
So Janine was possibly up to 90 infants.
All right, that
Jane
one's dead.
Was killing over 100. Suspected of killing over 100, so... That's the highest number, Jane, number two.
I cannot come up with a reason for the first two. I gotta go kill on this. That is horrific. Those are disgusting.
Well,
man.
This is highly unorthodox for this game, Scott, but I'll allow it.
I can't do it. What would you do?
I'd probably marry Doretha because I'd get that money after she's executed. I guess that the other two, I'd probably F with Janine just because there's at least somewhat of a reason why she did it versus total psychoticness. I mean, somewhere in her mind she thought she was doing a good thing.
Okay.
And Jane, I mean, to watch people go to death, come back and say go again, that's a killer.
So horrible.
So
horrible.
We only got one more, Scott.
One more, okay. Sorry, yeah, I couldn't do that
wild
one.
Card round, so,
even I couldn't find a connection there.
Yeah. So first, there's Juan Barava.
Oh.
She's a former masked Mexican wrestler known as the Lady of Silence.
What?
Yep.
Okay.
Juana began posing as a nurse to enter homes of elderly persons to rob them. On one occasion, an old lady made fun of Barava, which set her off on a killing spree. She was tried for 30 murders, while many suspect she is responsible for up to 48.
Wow.
There's Christina Edmonds, known as the Chocolate Cream Killer. Christina had a weird hobby. She would buy chocolates from a local shop, poison them with strychnine, and then return them to the shop. She obtained the strychnine under the premise that she was poisoning local stray cats. She would later increase the poisoning campaign by sending the parcels of chocolate to prominent people. And finally, there's Tilly Kilmick. She's got a kill in her name? K-I-L-M-E-K.
Okay.
Yeah. She got a reputation in Chicago for her psychic abilities. Tilly would inform the police the dates of certain deaths through precognitive dreams accurately. Turns out she knew this because she was scheduling her murders done by arsenic poisoning. She would mock some of her victims prior to their deaths by greeting them by saying, "It won't be long now," or "You'll be dying soon." So, Scott, Joanna, Christina, Tilly, FMK.
All right, I'm going to kill... I'm going to kill the last girl.
Tilly,
she's done. Seems very, very dark. Talks to people as they're dying. I'm not really feeling that. I don't know. For some reason, I don't know why. It just my initial reaction was she seemed a little bit darker than the other two. Okay, So she's dead. Okay.
Gotcha.
I'm gonna Okay, I am going to have a night of romance with the Lady of Silence. Because you know what? That's a little bit romantic.
Yeah.
Okay.
just don't make fun of her.
Yeah.
So what happened to that old girl?
Yeah. But the Lady of Silence, man, she had it going on until the whole killing thing. And then I'm going to
by the Shining Wizards or killing spree.
I am going to marry the chocolate person.
The chocolate cream killer. She wasn't chocolate looking. She was the chocolate cream killer.
No. Now, I'm not big into chocolate, but maybe she likes treats. And one, I'm not that big into cats. Don't love cats that much. Would never kill one, but I don't know. I'm not the biggest. I'm more of a dog guy, so I guess I could live with her. We'll have a lot of chocolate and a lot less enemies.
Yeah. All right. So, Scott, you're going to live a lifehood without stray cats. You'll have a night of passion with the Lady of Silence, and we are saying goodbye to the psychic silence. Lady who should have saw it coming. Scott, thank you once again for playing FMK.
That was a tough one. That one, that one probably just makes me look like a psychopath, like that I had to decipher between psychopaths. But I mean, I had to play the game. The nurse one was almost on. It was pretty much not doable. I cannot justify one better than the other. Those were pretty dark.
And as crazy as it sounds, I had to eliminate some people because even I said, "Whoa, I don't think I want to make a joke about this one."
Yeah. Yeah, so, all right, well, in another 130 episodes, we'll play again.
Yeah.
But, all right, Berlo, let's go home. Anything to promote?
Well, I'm not going to promote anything specific, but our former guest and friend of the show, Natty Bumpercar, his dog, Irving Brown Sox, just passed away last week. So, obviously, yeah, we all feel bad for him, and I just wanted to share his message that he asks in honor of his family dog. He asks that we all go to give food, supplies, money, or time to your local animal shelters. If you're unaware of any local shelters, which you can Google, you can go to your local PetSmart or Petco on Pet Adoption Day, and these organizations are always looking for help. So please give, or you can go to PETA.org and give money there.
That was a good one. And I will promote another comic friend just started a new podcast. So always interested in new podcasts. A good friend, Angelo Gingerelli, he started the Bath Podcast, B-A-T-H podcast. Episode 1 just came out. It is a podcast, a.k.a. the Bridge and Tunnel Hockey Podcast, a.k.a. your weekly source for all things New York Islanders. from a humorous point of view on iTunes and SoundCloud. So it's called the Bath Podcast, a.k.a. the Bridge and Tunnel Hockey Podcast. So I guess if you're an Islander fan or you just want to check out like a new sports podcast, go check Angelo and the guys out over there.
Do they have an awesome mascot like the Flyers?
Yeah, maybe. Gritty. Go Gritty. Yeah. Ooh. But anyway, guys, I guess that it is our time. I want to thank Brandon Novak for coming on tonight. And Berlu, it's been good as always. I will see you next week on another installment of Verbal Shenanigans. Go like us. Go listen. Go follow us. Go leave a comment on iTunes if you really dig what you're hearing, because that really helps us. Other than that, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Peace out.
Later.